You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is somewhat of an unusual show in that it doesn't concern specifically a news story that's breaking, but it does concern what's frustrating a lot of people. And it's really frustrating me too. And what is that? I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I don't have a candidate in this race. And I have trouble, even if I had a favorite candidate. And I don't want Hillary Clinton, by the way. Let me say that up front. And I understand the problems you have with Hillary Clinton. And I think there'll be millions of people coming out to vote not for whoever the Republican candidate is, and that will be Donald Trump, and he will win. But they simply don't trust, they don't like Hillary Clinton and what she stands for and what the Democratic Party has unfortunately come to stand for as well. You see, both political parties in the United States over the last 125 years, starting with the progressive movement that really began in the Republican Party and then spread to the Democratic Party, where their primary aim that was the government was going to solve all of society's problems. Oh, it's solved some of society's problems by making a lot of things a lot worse. And as a result, government has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to the point that the American people simply can't afford it anymore. We're overtaxed. We're in debt beyond our eyeballs. In this country, 2 out of 3, if not 7 out of 10, Americans strongly feel that this country is going in the wrong direction. Now, I saw some hope and possible change, not with Barack Obama. I knew what Barack Obama was from day one because I did my homework. I knew he was going to be a disaster, and he's turned out to be a complete disaster, a failure. And he will go down in history as a failure, both domestically and in foreign affairs. The country can survive worse presidents than Barack Obama. It survived Jimmy Carter, and he was pretty bad. But I thought that when the Tea Party movement arose spontaneously across this country, that maybe we would see the Republican Party or another party. Didn't have to be the Republican Party. Could have been the Democratic Party, but I knew they weren't going to respond that way. Do what parties have done historically in the United States and other countries when a mass movement, a spontaneous mass movement, movement, and that's what the Tea Party was. And you'll get critics saying, well, someone was funding it. Not really. People across this country in small towns, cities, as well as big ones, came together and said enough is enough. The federal government should not be bailing out private enterprises. Economists call that moral hazard. When banks and companies take risks that they shouldn't be taking and then expect the government, and it's really not the government, the American people, to bail them out. Well, that's not the way private enterprise works. Now, some of you are going to say, well, we had to save the auto companies. No, the auto companies should have gone to bankruptcy, and they did. And some will buy them up. There'll be new owners, and they will move on. You don't go to the federal government, hat in hand, requesting billion-dollar loans. And the same thing with the banks. How many times do we have to rescue Citibank or Citicorp today? And you'll notice why there has been prosecutions and big fines levied against many of these banks, for example. Very few, if any, of the people involved spent a day in prison or even jail. It'll never stop and will continue, and it is continue, until you go after the people that were responsible for creating the mess. And the problem is the real responsibility was not in the private sector, but in the government sector, in Congress, by forcing banks to make loans that historically they never would have made. That is the start of the mess, both under Clinton and Bush, twisting the arms of banks to force them to make no income, no assets, no jobs, so-called ninja loans, subprime loans. Now, I'm not going to spend any time on that, but I wanted to spend a few minutes as to what was the initial impetus, catalyst, if you will, for the Tea Party movement. One were the big bailouts that Congress was passing. I objected to it. I was against it. And you're always going to hear the sob stories. Well, they're going to go out of business. I was a small business, small, emphasized real small. But all my clients were also small businesses. Some were a little larger. They are never really helped. Not that they're asking for it. You know, when you start a business, you're risking your money, you're risking your time, and many succeed, but many more fail. Very few businesses survive 100 years. So the life expectancy of any business is finite. I would say shorter than the life expectancy of human beings today. Entrepreneurs take the risk, and if they're successful, they reap the reward, and if they're not successful, they lose their money. Many times they might lose their homes, might even cause a divorce. But entrepreneurship, business formation, is where the jobs are created. And it's because of entrepreneurs taking that and trying to really, they will be successful to the extent that they provide the goods and services that the consumers of this country want. If they're good at it, they'll grow and prosper. If they're not good at it, they will fail. And there's no government to help them out when they fail, because that simply is not the role of government. And why many people today work for large corporations, many more work for small, struggling companies. And usually in the first couple of years, businesses struggle. Because you're an unknown quantity, you don't have a record. Most businesses don't have enough financing. That's probably the biggest problem. Because when you're growing, you need cash. You need a cash inflow to build your business, attract employees, provide them benefits such as health care, insurance, and retirement plans. So most small businessmen and women across this country were against bailouts. But our so-called elected representatives that took large contributions from the so-called donor class, the executives and owners of these large corporations, they made sure that the big companies were taken care of and the unions were taken care of. The American people were not taken care of, and they shouldn't depend on government. There's a lesson there. Don't depend on government. It'll let you down every time, every time. 9/11 should not have occurred had the powers that be, the people in the government, were doing their jobs. Oh, many were doing their jobs, but they couldn't connect the dots. So you're risking a lot if you're going to be dependent on government. Today, we have many people that are very much dependent on the government for a paycheck. And I mean not only government employees, which there are many, millions, both at the federal, state, and local level, but people that are on welfare, as well as people that depend on Social Security and Medicare. Now, I fully understand that those that have paid over a period, usually of 30 to 40 years, sometimes even more than that, into Social Security and Medicare, expect benefits. The problem is, Social Security and Medicare were set up as a pay-as-you-go system where the people working today, that's you and me, are paying for the people that are entitled to the benefits. And over time, what's happened is the number of people working to the number of people receiving benefits have gone down, down, and down. Last time I checked, for every one person on benefits, there are three people working, and that's going to get lower than that. The only reason I'm bringing this up is many people simply do not understand that what is really driving the out-of-control government spending, There are three areas. One is welfare programs, and there are many of them. Food stamps is the obvious one, Section 8 housing, earned income credit, a welfare check every month. But and that's a big chunk of it. That's about 40, 50% of the problem. But entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid are also a big part of the problem because why? Both parties have overpromised. In other words, the benefits you're receiving are way beyond what you paid in. If you live, and that's the catch, if you don't make it to age 65 or 66, you in essence get nothing. If you die early, let's say after collecting benefits for 3 or 4 years, you might break even. But most Americans today, if they watch their diets, exercise, in other words, keep healthy, will live a long, prosperous life. In other words, they'll collect benefits for 10, 15, 20 years or more. You see, when Social Security was enacted, the biggest mistake in my mind they made was not having an individual account. In other words, what you put in, you could invest, and when you ultimately retired, would get back. Instead, they made it as pay-as-you-go, knowing that that would make it very, very difficult to ever repeal it. I don't anticipate Social Security or Medicare being repealed. What I anticipate is it will crash and burn for the simple reason it's not sustainable. It's not actuarially sound. Now, you can save Social Security to some extent. Medicare is a lost cause unless you ration the care and deny care to elderly people, and that's coming. What I'm anticipating is this. Because of the baby boom generation, you have slightly under 75 million people. Now, they're not all going to make it to retirement. But by 2030, when most, if not all, of the baby boom generation is retired, maybe 2035 at the outside, there'll be at least 60, 65 million people receiving a government check. That roughly will be at that time period about 20% of the population. Today, the population is a little over 320 million. You can do the math. And yes, you're going to have baby boom generation people dying. But by 2035, my educated guess, between 60 and 65 million, it's just a ballpark, all collecting benefits. And that's when this house of cards falls down because we literally can't pay the bills. We can't pay the bills now. What do you think it's going to happen when we're at 2035? All the baby boom generation is retired. They're all collecting benefits. And it's not just the baby boom generation. The people that are still living that came before the baby boom generation, some of them will still be living. Now, I'm giving this background for a reason. The American people are demanding that our Congress, our representatives, our senators, and our president be responsible, fiscally responsible. That's what we're talking about. What does that mean? That means balanced budgets. It also means making tough decisions. I've come to the conclusion that neither political party is up to the job. Because if they were doing their jobs, we wouldn't be in this mess. Remember, we initially were what I would call a representative republic, or a constitutional representative republic. For all practical purposes, we're not a republic anymore. And the Constitution, sad to say, is in essence a dead letter. And I say that because if you look at what we spend the money, it was never envisioned by the founding fathers that we would spend money in this amount for what we're spending on. You see, at one time, the test was, if the Constitution didn't permit it, we didn't spend the money on it. That has gone by the wayside many decades ago. I don't know if you recall, but there was a press conference and Nancy Pelosi was answering questions and someone said, and I think it was about the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, and someone asked, well, where in the Constitution do you have the authority to do this? Now, that was a good question. I would have said there's no authority to do this, period. In other words, if you want health insurance, buy your own. If you want your food, buy your own. You want your clothes, buy your own. You want a car, buy your own. In other words, go out and work for what you want. It's not the government's responsibility to provide you health insurance. And it's certainly not in the Constitution giving the authority to Congress to mandate that people buy it. And I would have thought the Supreme Court would have held that way. They didn't. Roberts was the swing vote. He rewrote the law. Not his job, but he did. Now, that's somewhat water under the bridge, but I'm trying to illustrate what the problems are and why we need a third party. And that's where I'm going with this. The big mistake that the Tea Party made, and I think it was a serious mistake, was not forming a third party. Contrary to popular belief, many of the people that were involved in the Tea Party movement, and I was to the extent that I supported them. Yes, many were Republicans, many were Democrats, and many were independents. They were angry, they were mad, they were frustrated because of what our elected representatives were doing. They were not happy. And they had large marches, rallies across this country. And that scared people. It scared the Democrats so much, they started to demonize the Tea Party movement. And when some of the Tea Party movement tried to get an exemption under the law, they went after them so they wouldn't succeed politically. They used the IRS to attack the Tea Party movement. Did the Republican Party really support the Tea Party movement? No. They were glad that the IRS went after them. You see, both political parties were threatened by the Tea Party movement. The Democrats were so scared that they tried to organize from the top, not spontaneously, a counter movement. That failed because it wasn't really the people on their own accord that formed it and marched and rallied. You know what I'm talking about, that Wall Street. I forget what they even called it, but it doesn't matter. The Republicans didn't like the fact that some of their chosen candidates that had been in office, senators, representatives, were primaried, lost the primary, and then Tea Party members won. In Texas, the big name is Ted Cruz. In Utah, it's Mike Lee. In Kentucky, it's Rand Paul. In Florida, yes, it was Marco Rubio. And there were many, many congressmen, too many to name, but here's the problem. There simply weren't enough of them. Talk to anyone that's served in either the House or the Senate. You quickly learn you got to have the votes. It's not enough to be an advocate, put your name on a bill. You need the votes first to even get a vote on it. A good example of this, something that's very, very popular, is the Fair Tax Movement that was separate from the Tea Party, but a lot of people in the Tea Party movement also supported the Fair Tax. Not everybody, but a good number, I would say the majority, and that's an educated guess. Now, I bring that up for a reason. Most people don't rely on the government. They got to find their own jobs, pay their own bills. They don't depend on welfare, never have accepted any welfare, and are proud of it. But when you hit a recession of the magnitude that we hit in 2008, and that's really when it started, although the real estate bubble started to pop in 2006 and 2007, the real impact was felt in 2008, big time in the fall of 2008, and yes, we were going through an election. Because it lasted over 18 months, and some people started to impact 2 to 3 years, it made it very difficult for many people that were hardworking, never were on welfare, took food stamps, for example, because to feed their children. And about half the people that are collecting food stamps, and it's over 45, 46 million, I've lost track. And that's hard to do. But it's even harder to look at the face of your children and not have the money to put food on the table, assuming you have a table. Part of the problem is this. We have today career politicians. And any career politician is going to put himself first. In other words, he needs to be reelected. That is the priority number one. And because they need to be reelected, and talk to the politicians, they'll tell you this, they got to be soliciting campaign contributions, really, from the day they walk in and start serving. Now, there are a few that don't have to do that, but most do. Even though most incumbents win 9 out of 10, 9.5 out of 10, that's called the incumbent advantage. Now, I'm giving you this history for a reason. There's a reason there's a two-party system. It helps to limit it to two parties. They're limiting competition, folks. They are. And they're really threatened by competition. If you want to get a politician's attention, start voting out his friends. That gets their attention real quick. Sending a letter, an email, or even visiting the local office. They'll be polite. You might get a return response, mostly a form letter. And some take it seriously and actually read what you send in. And some representatives and senators are good about it. Some are not, or mediocre. The point is, they know, first of all, once they're elected, they have a big advantage. Their name's known. And then the longer they serve, that advantage usually goes up. So it's really difficult to first primary them and challenge them, either in a Democrat or a Republican Party. And if you do, you still have a general election to face. All of that takes money. I have an acronym that I use if you want to get elected, especially president or senator. It really applies to all politicians, but more to a national type situation. You need what I call MAMA. You need money, organization, message, momentum, and ambition. And to the extent someone running has that, especially all of them, one is not enough. Money alone won't get you elected. Having the right message alone won't get you elected if people don't hear the message. You need all of them. Money, organization, message. Message is what you're running on, what you stand for, what your goals are, what you're trying to do for the people, what you're trying to change or improve. Momentum means you're winning, and not once, but many times. So incumbents know the game. They know they need this. And if they want to stay in office, and most of them do, they have the ambition. The problem is not a shortage of people wanting to become representatives or senators or run for president. We saw that in the Republican Party, 17 people, most of which shouldn't have been running. What I'm leading up to this, the Tea Party made a mistake. The Tea Party movement made a mistake. They were marginalized, demonized by the Democratic Party, but also by the Republican Party, who tried to take them over, quite frankly, or at least parts of them. And there were somewhat competing Tea Party groups. I'm not going to get into that history. But the message was loud and clear to everybody. The people are a little upset here. This was a rather unique, well, not really unique, but we hadn't seen this in a long while. That's a better way to say this. But the enthusiasm, and believe you me, there are a lot of enthusiastic people here. They didn't take the next step, and you can debate all day why they didn't. That, you see, is the problem. Because what are we seeing right now in the Republican Party? Donald Trump is going to get the nomination, and Donald Trump is going to be elected president. Oh, yes, I could be wrong, and I think it could be a close race, largely depending on if Donald Trump doesn't choose what I would say is a conservative slash libertarian as his VP. If he selects an established Republican, it's going to be a close race. I say that because the Tea Party movement, as well as the Trump supporters, and they're not, while many were in both, many were in neither. So I'm not equating the Tea Party movement with Trump supporters at all. Some would say many of the Tea Party supporters were really Cruz supporters. That's irrelevant. My problem is both parties are the problem. That's why I call it the two-party tyranny. They're both big government parties. And until you have a party that's successful and has a majority in the House, the Senate, and hopefully the presidency, nothing fundamentally is going to change. They don't want to change their nice, cozy club, their career benefits, pensions, health care. They're just not. And they're not going to just willingly let outsiders in. That's why I'm laughing at Paul Ryan, who I probably would like and respect. At one time I did. But he's been bought and paid for too, largely in the immigration area, which I'm going to stay away from at least this show. Hard to do, but I will. He can't endorse Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump has won, what, 31 states? He has, I think, 11 million votes, or is approaching 11 million votes. By the time he's done, he'll probably have 32, 33 states that he's won, probably 13, 14 million votes compared to a congressman from Wisconsin. I don't know how many votes he got last election. I'll take a guess, 150,000, maybe 200,000. I know he's popular in his district. And yes, he was elected House Speaker. But you see, many of the conservatives and Tea Party congressmen that were elected, their candidate is not Paul Ryan. It isn't. They went along to go along and see if fundamental changes were made. And yes, he's going to meet with Donald Trump tomorrow. I think it will be cordial, but I don't think Paul Ryan, however long the meeting is, and I don't think it's very long. I remember when I was in aerospace, we would have, visitors. And I negotiated international contracts, and I would bring the people to the deputy general manager's office. And one day I was walking back, and I was talking. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Israeli Air Force. I said, "Well, what do you think?" He says, "Well, this is somewhat unusual, this meeting greeting the bosses." That's sort of what this meeting is. You see, Donald Trump is conducting a hostile takeover of the Republican Party. For most of his life, he was a liberal Democrat. I'm from New York. I understand what that means. My entire family and I was the exception, including my relatives, were all Democrats. Because at that time, the Democratic Party was for the working man. And that's how my parents saw it. Republicans were for the country club set, or what was then described as Rockefeller Republicans. It was the party of the rich and well-connected. It was never a conservative party. What is needed is a new political party. It's not going to happen overnight. The biggest mistake that could be made in forming a new party is to hang your hat on a presidential candidate. I won't support any effort to do that. You need to build a party, because what do we have today in politics? It's really a personality contest when you come right down to it. Yeah, they need mama, money, organization, message, momentum, ambition. But there are a lot of people that will run for public office. Unfortunately, not the best people do. There's some good ones, but there are a lot that simply, I wish they would have pursued other career goals. And because we've had, over the last 125 years, this drift to bigger and bigger and bigger government, and every time we go to war, it gets slightly bigger, and the role expands, and the functions of government expands, we're finally approaching the end of the road, the day of reckoning, the debt bomb. We need to avoid that. We need to turn quickly and go in another direction. But it's not going to happen if you're relying on a Donald Trump, a Ted Cruz, or anybody else, Democrat or Republican Party. Now, I've given up on the Democratic Party. They just want to make it bigger. But guess what? So do the Republicans. They like to talk conservative. Some will even talk libertarian. But you see, talk is cheap. Results matter. Budgets need to be balanced, not talked about, balanced. Actually, they need to be balanced at a much lower level. Government needs to be limited. We seem to have forgotten what, at least from the American Revolution up to the Civil War, our national government, what we today call the federal government, was limited. And it was. Usually less than 3% of the total goods and services, final goods and services, produced by the economy, called real gross domestic product. Today, it's slightly under 20%. And to fund this large government, what happened? Democrats and Republicans passed the 16th Amendment, ratified by the states, signed into law in 1913. We've had the income tax for 103 years, and probably we'll have it for another 6, 8, 10 years. If we don't have another political party, we'll continue to have it. Now, I mention that for a reason. As long as we let the federal government invade your privacy and overtax you, as long as we have what I call a very progressive income tax, which penalizes what? It penalizes work. It penalizes success. It penalizes people that save and provide for their retirement. It rewards people that don't provide for their retirement, don't work. We need to stop and eliminate, abolish the income tax. And if we do that, we don't need the Internal Revenue Service. What I'm talking about, and I gave a show on it, was the fair tax. I'm highlighting this for a reason. Whatever new party that should come along, it needs to deal with what I would call the essential problems of this country. And that is spending and taxation and debt. And that means, in a word, limited government. We have to downsize the federal government. And it's going to be painful. Some would say it would be impossible. I agree. It would be impossible as long as we have the Democrat and Republican parties. They are responsible for this mess. People believe their lies, and they're still believing them. Look at the young people flocking to Bernie Sanders. Vote for me, I'll give you free stuff. I call it Santa Claus socialism. They don't understand who pays for this. You do. The American people do. We have to get back to an America where there was a strong work ethic, success, productivity, producing goods and services that people want is rewarded, not punished. We got to dramatically downsize the federal government, and we got to change the way we collect taxes. Now, I'm not going to get into the fair tax, but it's a critical component. You need to remember that the American Revolution, as well as the Civil War, were about taxes. We wouldn't have had either the American Revolution or the Civil War if we did not have a tax rebellion. Don't forget that. And it's a critical element here. But it's not enough to march and protest. Because the powers that be, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, you better believe they will use force, namely police, militia if it's necessarily, namely the National Guard, to keep you in check. Not that the Tea Party movement was violent. It was nothing but that. That Wall Street movement was. And that was of the lying lunatic left, largely bought and paid for. What I'm calling for is those that supported the Tea Party movement and those that support a fair tax. I don't care what your registration is today, Democrat, Republican, Independent, or whatever, Libertarian. We need to reignite that spontaneous movement. But this time, in every state, in every congressional district, in every precinct, organize a national party. And what will be critical is vetting the people that we pick to run for the House, the Senate, and the presidency. In other words, it's going to take money, it's going to take organization, it's going to take a message, and gradually, momentum. It's not going to happen in a day, a week, a month, a year, and to be perfectly honest, in a decade. But you have to start somewhere. You win by giving a positive message. Tell people what you're for. Explain what you're for, both in government spending and taxation, because that is what affects the American people. Everybody has to pay taxes. You can't avoid them. Now, some people do, but I'm saying generally you can't. We have to have a tax system that is fair. In other words, there's a low incidence of tax on those that earn, for example, less than $60,000 a year. And if you listen to my show on the Fair Tax Less, you'll understand that number. Because if you think about it, and I have thought about it, and I think you can buy the necessities of life for less, but that truly depends where you're at. Most people today require somewhere between $0 and $60,000 to make sure they have adequate food, clothing, a house over their head, and insurance, and some vehicle or means to get to work or get to school. So we need a movement that clearly sets forth what it's for. It's a clear, concise message that the overwhelming majority of the American people can support and will support, no matter what their former political affiliation was. It needs to be a party of principle. But more importantly, we need to recruit people that want to run for the House, the Senate, and the presidency, that don't want to make it a career. That's key. And those people need to be checked out. We want to keep out the opportunists, the crooks, the con men, and truly have people across this nation of integrity and character running for office in every congressional district, in every Senate race, and for president. It's going to take years to do this. I don't want to be sitting here 8 years from now or in some other radio station, hopefully another radio station, and have literally neither a party nor a candidate that I can truly get behind. You see, I have been voting year in, year out for the lesser of two evils, and I'm tired of it. If you vote for the lesser of two evils, you're still voting for evil. It's time for the good people of this nation to come together. The people that came out for the Tea Party, and then gradually saw it being disappear because it was being attacked by the IRS, by the Democratic Party, and the Republican Party that were trying to take it over. People understand that both parties are responsible for this financial mess. We have to get our house in order, and we don't have much time. And the only way it's going to change is to form a party. I don't care what the name is. I put out, just as a suggestion, the Constitutional Independent Party, because we're independent of the Democrat and the Republican Party, and we truly believe in the Constitution. I wanted to keep it as general as possible. So all former members of those parties are invited, welcome. I'll tell you who won't be welcome, and that are career politicians. We're not looking to repeat the mistakes of the Democrat and Republican Party. We will limit terms. It's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take attorneys. It's going to take organization, pollsters, advertisers. It's going to take the American people to do this. I can't do it. I certainly can't fund it. But I can put out for your consideration, I think, an idea that's overdue. I want the United States to be great again, but I want a United States that has a limited federal government, where individuals are free to pursue happiness, and where you're not penalized for working hard, saving money, starting a business. In other words, a tax system that encourages peace and prosperity instead of what we have today is a huge, giant warfare and welfare state. It's called collectivism. That's what we have today, collectivism. Some would call it statism. But both parties are collectivist parties. I call it the progressive cartel. And they're killing this country. and the American people are crying out in desperation. Trump is just a reaction to the inability of either political party to truly address the concerns and the needs of the American people. So if you're listening out there, it doesn't take a lot of people. I would say less than 2 to 3% of the people to get energized and do it. If you're expecting everyone to jump on board, it's never going to happen. New political parties, it's really a small core or cadre of people, really 1 or 2%, that have to take a leadership role, have to finance it, have to organize it. And the danger is, or what we need to do, is make sure it's a mass movement where it's not controlled by one single individual or donor. Now, I just got the signal. I got to wrap it up. Let me play America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.